episode of Movie Talk to Chill. We're your hosts. I'm Tony Serrano.
I'm Gavin Blitz.
I'm Patrick Wall.
And before we get into what we're going to be talking about today, I do have something to say to you guys.
Oh, crap.
And it is actually pretty serious.
I have cancer.
Busted makes me feel good. And that's what we're talking about today.
I was scared for myself there for a moment.
It's like, I don't know, do I need to be sitting this close to him?
Do I need to get more shots?
Yes, you do. So, thank God there's a tablecloth here. This is nice linens. These are the good linens.
This is a good linen.
Bringing back the 2020 fashion, gloves and a mask at this point.
So we screened Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Screen makes it seem like we got a preview of it. We bought tickets and went to the theater and watched it.
So we screened Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
We were invited by our wallet to go.
To
Ghostbusters.
Yes. To be fair, my wallet didn't want to go. Yeah. It wanted to stay home and not do anything.
Hey, it was a matinee.
Which was still $11.
Yeah.
How much is like a Friday night showing nowadays?
22.
Yeah. Times it by two.
Yeah.
More expensive on a Friday night. We watched Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. We did tell you guys we were going to be going and seeing it. Spoiler alerts, if you haven't seen that, it's been out almost, by the time this episode comes out, it'll be out
a week and a half.
Yeah, you've had time. All right? You had time. So.
And if you still need to wait, just skip it.
Yeah.
Turn this episode off, go watch the movie, and then come back. Call off work. That doesn't exist right now. You got shit to do.
Yeah. This is Movie Talks and Chill approved message to call off work.
If they want, they can call us.
Yeah. Call us at 555. We do not endorse this.
We're not actual doctors.
Yeah.
No?
But I got a note.
I didn't even stay at a Best Western last night.
It's Holiday Inn Express. Get it right.
I've got PhDs in psychology and paranormal psychology.
Yeah.
I call bullshit.
What is it you do again, Dr. Bankman?
What are you a doctor of? And now you catch ghosts. So that's just a little throwback to the original. But also today, while we're recording, it is Easter. So
yes, happy Easter.
Happy Easter, everybody. Enjoy your chocolatza and your...
And your eggs.
Yeah.
His buddies lay eggs.
Yeah.
At least the Cadbury ones, though. I still remember the commercial for when I was a kid where they were holding like
they
auditions.
Still air it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Where they had the line?
From 1990. And they haven't changed it. So, they haven't made it better or nothing. It's just still the same grainy commercial.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
It's like the Hershey Kisses commercial during the holidays where they play jingle with bells.
Bells, yep.
You can't go wrong with those. So... kick it off. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Overall, I liked it. It was really good. I like how they basically just picked off from the moment where they left off on the Afterlife. Like where Ernie Hudson or Winston Zeddemore bought the old fire station and they're like, it's yours now. You are now Ghostbusters. And the opening scene is them driving down Broadway, shooting at... No, they were in Chinatown because they were chasing the sewer dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're going down Chinatown in Manhattan, which I don't know if you've ever been to, is very crowded. I don't know if you would be able to do 80 down that block.
I don't even know if you'd be able to move.
Certainly won't have a gunner seat out.
Yeah.
No room for that. Not during rush hour.
Not
during rush hour.
So I thought the opening scene was really cool. I don't know how you guys felt about this, but in the first movie, it felt like the brother and sister were both like the main protagonist
now,
of the movie.
Clarify what for the people. When you say Afterlife. The first movie.
Afterlife.
We're meaning the first continuation movie.
Yes. The last one from 3 years ago.
most recent.
It felt like the brother and sister were both like the main characters. Like the brother had his own story going and the sister had her own story and they kind of met at the end for the climax for the big battle. Mm. This one focused almost entirely on the daughter, the sister.
Yeah, on Phoebe.
Yeah, on Phoebe. Which is not a bad thing. It's just, I don't know why they had to... Because I don't think they're in, like, filming production of season 4 of Stranger Things, so I don't think there was a schedule conflict for the brother. I just don't know why they kind of moved away from his antics to focus mainly on Phoebe.
Well,
not a bad decision. I mean, she's a great actress. She was doing really good, really well. But I wanted to see more of Stranger Things. Kid, can't remember his name at the moment.
Wolfred or something? Or
Wolfric.
So I think, in my opinion, because they did kind of mention it at the, well, not the very beginning scene, but after they end up in the mayor's office.
Mm.
And
which, by the way, is William Peck, and they don't call
Walter Peck.
Walter Peck. They don't call him Dickless. I was a little upset about that.
Yes, they do. So at the end, when they're...
Oh, that's right. Someone skipping, yelled.
Someone in the audience out, and they go, yeah, dickless. I just start busting out laughing in the theater. I wasn't sitting next to Tony, so I couldn't be like, he said it!
Which is, the only weird thing about that is, funny they did the callback, but the weird thing about it was that when he called them in the original movie, they were just in that room with just a few people.
Yeah.
So it's like, how would everybody have known it?
I mean, dickless is a pretty common insult. Yeah. He could have said a myriad of other
things.
That's
a pretty common New York insult.
Yeah.
I haven't lived there since I was 14, so I cannot verify that, but I'm just going to go ahead and say yes.
I think they just wrote it in because of the actual story that happened to him, and I can't remember the actor's actual real name, but the one that plays the mayor now that was the Nicholas character, Walter Peck. He did say that after that movie came out, for the longest time he'd walk down the streets, like in New York, and people would scream that out to him. So I think that was like a running callback to that actual true story that happened to him. I'm taking a guess here. I did not talk to Jason Reitman or Gil Kilim.
Maybe they just hired some random extra and they said it and they just left it in.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have done that because if it was an extra and they kept in the line that they spoke, they have to pay them a considerable more. So if an extra did that, they probably would have cut it out.
I'm sure they got a few extra dollars in their budget. what I was getting to is when they're in, they're in his office, but to your point about why they kind of more focused on her is because at that point, the son, just like his girlfriend or the girl that he was interested in Afterlife that is in this one as well.
She also has a very minor role.
They're both 18 now. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, that's what even the mayor said. He's like, oh, it's a minor. You know, he even brings up it and that's why they're like trying to back her out and grounding her basically or benching her. So I think that's a big reason why they focused on that because she's the one who really at the end of the day, besides Winston now because he runs that big, you know,
corporation, whatever.
Well, that, you know, secret ghost busting lab or whatever. You know, he knows
engineers.
Yeah, he knows
took over
now.
An ancient air aquarium on Coney Island and made it into a ghost busting lab.
Yeah. But aside from him, you know, and some of the newer people and the original, the OGs, she was the only one out of their group that really knew anything about the stuff.
That is true.
She knew how to build it. She was like a big focus on it, but she's the one who's been grounded from it. So
she was the one who figured out the best way to use the ion cannons against the demigod that was attacking New York City.
No, he's God. He was a god.
Yeah.
Small G, but God. I mean,
he's able to stick horns into his head.
Yeah, exactly.
And fuse them to him.
Which gets ripped out later by Nope. You know what? We'll get to it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I do agree with you. Yeah, but I mean, really, it didn't really focus much on anybody else's story, though, if you really break it down, except for the main, you know, bad guy, which really didn't show up till a lot later. So, based on, like, the trailer, it seemed like all those bigger events happened earlier.
Yeah.
And they were going through the whole time, but this really kind of happened way later in the movie.
For me, that's my only two gripes with the movie was, one, the big bad was, like, in it too quick and then just gone.
Mm.
Whereas, like, you know, they had, and in the original, they have that giant fight with Gozer. Mm. In Afterlife, when they came back, they had the fight with the dogs and then Gozer again in the field. Whereas this one, I just kind of felt like he was so big and bad, but he didn't really. They show that you know it went that he freezes all of New York.
I have a theory,
but it was just like as like a snap of that. It was like, oh, freeze all of New York, and then we're here. What the hell just happened? Like, you know, so it came in really quick. But the other end of it was, I felt like Phoebe was the only one that actually got a story in there. They threw everybody else in and didn't really get to develop any of that. And it just kind of felt a little bit overwhelming outside of her.
So I will say to this, or what you said, you had a theory.
I did. First. The final fight takes place in the fire station. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt a little anticlimactic for me, like you were saying. It felt very rushed, no kind of like build up or anything. I felt like he was going to show up like halfway through the movie and like at the epoch. And then like the final battle would the rest of the movie would be them figuring out how to get him and then the actual battle.
And close
like,
up the hole.
Yeah. But he just shows up, they kick his ass, and then he dies. My theory is that the permits for shooting in New York City ran out, so they only had the soundstage to shoot on.
Hmm. Maybe.
That is my working theory.
That's my working theory.
So my thought on it is, because, and it'll tie into a couple points about it, also, I really enjoyed it. I liked it overall.
I really enjoyed it.
No, I get it. I know you did.
Yeah.
You just hated certain parts. Bastard.
No, I didn't.
Like, hate it. I know, I'm joking.
It just wasn't as epic as, I mean, the first Afterlife was epic.
Yeah.
It felt like we got Avengers Endgame, and then it's them trying to rebuild. They did Endgame first. Yeah.
Well, also you got to remember, too, I think Afterlife also got a bigger, like you said, like an epic feeling because, number one, they're bringing back something that was almost 40 years old at the time.
Yeah.
You know, from the original. Because basically it's a continuation. They say technically from the original, but the second one did happen. They did a couple Easter eggs from that or a couple of hints or callbacks. But, I mean, so it's going to feel even bigger. And then you got the Big Bad Gozer. You know, everybody remembered that. And then the famous line. So I think that's part of the reason. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm saying I think that's part of the reason why it felt so epic. Whereas, like, that's telling a brand new story. So that was the beginning of the passing of the torch. This one was the torch is passed.
Yeah.
So they're making their own story. So, again, I agree. There were some things that felt maybe kind of rushed. Or there's a lot of stuff in there. But my theory behind, like I said, about the firehouse or the, you know, the big bad was there and then gone. There's other portions of the movie, and I've said it to you guys offline before, and I'll say it to you guys online, now, on the line now.
On the line.
is that they took a lot of things almost from the cartoon, the real Ghostbusters, back in the late 80s, early 90s, and incorporated into this movie. So, number one, the red jackets, the red winter jackets, that was from the cartoon. If you notice, some of the jumpsuits were different colors.
The Possessor was from the cartoon.
Yeah, the Possessor is from the cartoon.
The Possessor and Slimer were like two of the mainstays in the cartoon.
And I think maybe a version of this big bad, this, you know, ice, you know, god or whatever ice, was, they had a similar episode in the cartoon as well.
Okay.
So, but in the cartoon, the reason why I was saying about the climax scene or the end scene is, in the cartoon, it was like you had 30 minutes.
Yeah.
They have a big bad. It goes, and they have a quick kind of finish to it.
Right.
That very much reflected how the cartoon did things. Also, the changing of some of the features on the proton pack and the Detrona wand. Mm-hmm. Like those more canon-looking or great-looking things instead of the clear tubes on the end.
Right.
I can't remember the terminology. He says the terminology in the movie, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's basically the end of it. If you look, that's very similar to the cartoon and stuff like that. And then adding in the yellow there, which was, I kind of like that. I kind of like that new, like just some of the new yellow bits and bobs on the, on the proton pack was kind of cool. was it Dan Aykroyd? He said, he was like proton 2.0 or something when he opened up the van. Yeah.
So basically, Winston Zeddemore is, since Ghostbusters has stopped, he's never stopped. He's had he has this big philanthropy, charity organization, but he uses half of it to just build new ghost-busting weapons. Mm. And, he has a secret vault at the aquarium. A van and a Mercedes just pulls up with brand new proton packs. He's like, well, how long have you been working on these? Don't ask.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
If you don't know, you can't afford it.
I am Batman to ghost at night.
Basically.
So he's been doing this for decades at this point. I will say the cool part about the aquarium is they, for some reason, keep actual ghosts just locked in, tanks, effectively, but they charge particles so they can't leave. And then when the god destroys... The
same particle as, the proton.
The proton,
the trap.
Yeah, but they have it just like a windshield over the aquarium tanks. I forgot where I was going with that. It's just cool. All
right.
It was really cool.
It was a research lab, so that way they could actually study them and figure out. One of them was
creepy as fuck.
But they also, when they were taking them out of the objects, they were taking them out, and then it looked like they were, I don't know if they were opening a portal and getting them into another bigger facility or if they were sending them on. I can't remember.
No. So when
the ghost
went into a trap.
Yeah.
So the spirit, but they were just putting them into a larger facility.
Got it. Because
that's what he was telling him. He's like, you know, didn't you guys think about this at all? Like when their trap starts to fail, so to speak.
It gets so big.
It's so cramped. And
that's why they get shown the aquarium filled with ghosts, because they have giant, four more giant tanks.
They're trying to figure out, if we did these each by a trap, it'll take us, 37 years.
Yeah.
Well, they also mentioned in the original movie, the original 1984, when Egon is explaining to Winston about it. He's like, yeah. Or he says, Ray, I'm getting concerned about the capacity or something along those lines. He's like, well, you know, take this Twinkie. Imagine the Twinkie, like, you know, I don't know, 50 miles long or something, and, you know, weighing
200 tons.
Or yeah. That's a big ass Twinkie.
Big ass Twinkie.
So they were saying basically the, I can't remember the terminology, the, like, the spiritual energy was going to become so enlarged because they're all, I mean, even though they're in there, you know, they produce an, you know, ecto.
They're not taking up, negative energy. Yeah, they're not taking up space, but they are producing that energy field. Yeah.
It's kind of like making a compressed zip file so you can send a folder to somebody in an email.
Are you familiar with the Hadron Collider?
Yeah. Could they not get the Wiseman score of 4.2?
No. No, they could.
Do you ever discuss quantum physics? Only in mid conversation.
Black hole.
So yeah, they basically built this massive containment unit there, or multiple ones. I think he said. Yeah. You know, we have multiple ones, but that's what they were doing. They were just separating the spirits from whatever they were attached to. That's like why Ray was buying, you know, the haunted items or the spirit infused items and separating them. But
I like when he's out there measuring it, and it's like. What was the first one that they smashed? Was it like a watch or something?
Yeah, it was a watch. Yeah. It was her husband's watch.
And then the kid just comes in there, wham!
So a little context, podcast is back in this movie, and he's working with Dan Aykroyd.
As on his podcast.
Yeah.
So it's the occult, Ray's occult classic podcast or something.
So he investigates, like Antiques Roadshow for haunted shit.
Yeah.
So the old lady brings in a watch. She's like, my husband died wearing this, and I think I could still hear him. And they do a PKE meter, like, no, it's garbage. And then the podcast just slams it with a sledgehammer. And she's like, sorry, the sledgehammer gets used.
She starts almost crying because it was like a cinema. He's like, sorry. Yeah, the sledgehammer gets better views.
And then they pay into the line. And everyone's like, shit.
They start holding them closer. Yeah.
So, yeah, to what Patrick is saying. So, basically, everybody that was in Afterlife is in this movie for the most part. But basically all the main characters. You got the girl that was
the love interest
for the son. She's there.
She's doing an internship at Zedmore's like paranormal research think tank.
Yeah.
She's blasting shit with a proton pack.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
There's actually a scene where somebody's spraying goo on like an object, and there was a callback to the second one.
Well, she also, and this was I think a callback to Ghostbusters that, you know, did really bad, the all female because she had the wrist proton or the proton pack.
Oh yeah, she had the wrist mount. The old secretary or the assistant from the first two movies,
Janine.
So when she suits up, she doesn't get a proton pack. She just gets a wrist blaster.
That
was actually another thing from the other Ghostbuster, Extreme Ghostbusters. That changed there. And actually, they took a lot of that also from that cartoon because in Extreme Ghostbusters, the storyline for that cartoon was it's younger kids that are taking over. And it's like, it's Ray and Winston. It's like they're all, like Egon and them, they're all older, but they need new people because they're getting too old to do it.
So what makes it Extreme? Do all these kids ride skateboards or something?
Well, no, it makes Extreme because they changed up like the proton packs. They changed up a lot of things. They changed up the way things
are doing. They drive a lowered truck.
Yep. No, it makes
one of them does a sick ollie.
They just base jump into the hotel.
They actually invent the Indy 900 before Tony Hawk does it.
I got the answer for you. Why don't you call up the creators of Extreme Boat? Ask them why it's so extreme.
They'll watch it and just see one kid rollerblading. Extreme.
On the case of 1 to 10, I give it a 9.5.
Well, because at the time when they were doing that cartoon, they were basically making it more like futurized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they upgraded a bunch of stuff and they changed things. So some of the things to like that wrist gun one.
Yeah.
And even though I never watched it, but I have seen pictures of it from the 2016 reboot Ghostbusters.
Well, it's also in the trailer where
those proton packs look very similar to Extreme Ghostbusters.
Well, it's also in the trailer that the lead actress, what's her name? Not McCarthy. Fuck it. But she's battling in Times Square and she just pulls out like what looks like two wrist guns, but it turns into like brass knuckles, but for ghosts. So she just starts punching her way through like a horde of them.
Kristen Wiig.
No, the other one. Kristen Wiig is the blonde from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I know.
No, who is...
No, you're talking about Kate McKinnon.
No.
Kate McKinnon.
Yes.
Give me a goddamn...
All right, it's either...
Even I know that, and I didn't see the movie.
Melissa McCarthy, Kate McKinnon. She
was the one... Okay, I was wrong. Melissa McCarthy.
Okay. All right, never mind. Moving on. So
and moving on from that debacle.
Told you that story to tell you this one.
Yeah, but exactly.
I did really enjoy that when, you know, they put Janine got in suited up, and then when Bill Murray finally shows up, he's like, Melnitz in uniform. And then he does that little thing where he taps thing and he gets the little bottle of liquor out that he's been hiding. He's like, yeah. Purge anyone?
Yeah. It's just sitting there in like an old, like, you think it's like a, looks like a conduit.
Or a junction box or something. Yeah. I mean, he hits it like the Fonz, and then he just pulls out a bottle of whiskey. To be fair, it has now aged an extra 20 years. That's going to be disgusting.
I don't know. If it's scotch, it's not.
True. But it's also been sitting next to a bunch of wires that have been running, so it got warm a lot.
It got very hot. The fermentation process restarted.
I drink it.
It's now arsenic.
I will say, I think my favorite character, which I just love him and a lot of the stuff he does, is Ken Nanjiani.
I was going to bring him up. Yeah, I was going to bring him up. That was a big highlight of the movie, even though there's a lot of other... everything else was phenomenal, but...
Well, especially when he brings in the beginning when he starts, he's trying to hack the box of junk from his grandma's closet. Oh, my grandmother had all this weird stuff in there. I don't really know what it is. $30 for the whole box. And Ray picks up that one thing and he's like, wow, this is off the chart. Oh, yeah, that one's $60. He just keeps upping up the price.
I generally thought he was just going to be like a special appearance kind of
thing. I thought he was just going to end right there. Plot. And then he's
the fire master. Back. So context of the story, the fire masters back in ancient Babylonian or whatever are the ones that sealed this god away into the orb or the devil's testicle, as they refer to it in the movie.
Back then they didn't have proton packs, so they used brass was the new ingredient that they used, and that's what she infused into the proton pack to be able to actually, you know, control.
Because when they first fight the big bad, like, they shoot the lasers at him and he just holds up his hand and turns, you know, plasma into ice in seconds.
It's a plasma stream.
It's a proton stream.
Proton stream.
So let's show some respect to these people, all right? So for everybody
cross the stream.
So for everybody who doesn't know, in the back of the proton pack where the red light is, that's called the collider. The collider has the proton particles that go in and go into the neutrona one, where the neutrona one and the proton particles combine and create a proton stream, which is a reason why it actually wraps around the ghost, because ghosts are made of electrons, the negative energy, whereas proton and neutron, they form the atom.
One movie and now he's a nuclear
engineer. I've known this for a long time.
Yeah, one movie in the 80s.
Shut your mouth. Get my proton pack out.
Sweden's calling.
I just want to make sure everybody understands there is actual science behind this.
Yeah, there's science and physics. And that has been proven
in documentaries. They actually confirmed it. Yeah, so shut your mouth.
Ghosts don't exist. I'm throwing that out there right now.
It was in Mythbusters.
So, fun fact about that. No, I'm not. The guy...
Didn't they try to make one, though, or something like that?
Well, I don't know if they tried to make, but the one guy, Jamie, he was actually a props consultant on this movie.
Okay.
Because there's a YouTube video where he's on set with them and he's like playing with all the new toys and everything, and he's asking them questions and they're explaining everything. So yeah, shut your mouth.
Filthy.
When you die and become a ghost and I've got a proton pack, I guarantee you'd be like, oh shit.
Oh, if I become a ghost, Patrick. I know exactly who I'm haunting. But that's assuming for some reason you outlive me. And I don't see that happening.
We didn't say it had to be natural causes.
Yeah, true. Yeah, the gun naturally went off.
The bullet went through his body.
Officer, it was self-defense. He looked at me.
Yeah. It's coming right for us.
But no, that guy, he did add a nice little flair to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because he has that, and he always has, because he was in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. He's been in other stuff as well, but... He was basically almost like the same character in Silicon Valley that he is in this movie. I think that's just his natural
just
way.
Dumber.
That's just
because he was a licensed reseller of shoes. That was his job. And then he tries to convince the kid, like, hey, you size 8? He's like, no, you want to try and fit into one?
He's like, you have a size 11? No, but you want to try to fit in a size 8? No.
Then he finds that room and he's like, this is where it's at. It's got all that stuff in there. It's like a sex dungeon.
Yeah, it's like a sex dungeon. This is not a sex dungeon. Would a sex dungeon have chains and then handcuffs? Okay, yes, it is.
As I'm saying this,
it's just not proving your point.
I found this one. I was in here looking for some Pop-Tarts.
Yeah,
it's behind the pantry.
Right behind the pantry. Like, it just opens. Like,
The Pop-Tarts were the secret lever.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Because no one would ever think to pull the Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, thank God it was never the brown sugar.
Well, the only thing, and I understand why, because he had given up acting completely, you know, after his wife had passed away, you know, yeah. Not having Rick Moranis in this, but if there would have ever been a scene for Rick Moranis to show back up in, it would have been that one where that ice god thing, monster, demon, whatever you want to call it, knocks on that door. He says, you know, are you the fire master? Or when he goes to the shop, are you the fire master?
Oh, yeah.
It would have been great if he knocked on a door and it's Rick Moranis. And he's like, are you the fire master? He's like, no, I'm the key master. Yeah, see you later.
Yeah. Oh, no, the key master. See you later. You need me to help with your taxes?
Yeah. So I think a better scene would have been at the end ever. After, like, at mid-credit scene, basically. Because we got one with all, like, the little Stay Puft Marshmallow people stealing the marshmallow truck, which was, you know, adorable. I love those little guys. Especially when they're just fooling around with, like, lasers and lighters and stuff. And they're
burning themselves.
And then they're, like, cut in half or they're on fire or something like that.
And we didn't have any Sigourney Weaver in this either.
No,
because we had a mid-credit scene in Afterlife with Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, the mid-credit scene that I was thinking of, like, Rick Moranis would show up to the firehouse to do, like, an inspection. Like, this is going to take forever. Like, all right, how much money do you guys do? Absolutely effing not.
Do you guys ever not destroy a building?
Okay, who brought the frozen demon?
who left the freezer open?
Well, so, there's one thing, a question I did have. There was one thing, and because I overthink a lot of stuff or really dig deep into certain things. So in the one scene when the, you know, their containment unit goes down again, and it releases everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you go back to Afterlife. How did they stop Gozer?
It was essentially a giant trap underneath.
Oh yeah,
it was a whole bunch of traps that all.
But it all opened at the same time.
So they had to put Gozer somewhere.
Mm-hmm. It's okay? Still in the trap in the Iowa field.
Yeah, but it's in all different traps. But they have to contain them. They would have put him in the containment unit.
Right.
So the containment unit opened. Why didn't Gozer come back out again?
Because maybe it's not that one. Maybe Egon built a special one at that Missouri house to where they could just dump it in.
Why would they just leave it there for anybody to be able to?
Yeah.
Just
what you do is you find the trap with the head, and you put that in cement, and then throw that in the trap.
Or what I'm thinking is maybe that's when Winston took it to his specialty facility.
Yeah.
Because he's probably like, yeah, we don't want to let this thing out again.
Yeah. This interdimensional demon has caused enough harm.
But a little bit to your point, one of the continuity flaws that I have trouble reconciling is, you know, the ice god opens up the containment tank and all of the ghosts fly into the sky, like from the first one.
Yeah.
Where they shut down the containment grid and then, you know, that cool 80s music starts.
It's
but,
magic.
Yeah, that's a
free,
song.
Free.
Keep it below 20 seconds.
Keep it below 20 seconds.
I don't think anyone can rightfully call that copyright infringement.
No. We can't even see you. That was such a horrible impression.
Yeah.
We just can't see you.
But in this one, so that thing happens, but to fix it, Ray goes like, if we just jump start it, the tank will heal itself. And I was like, that is solid iron. How is it going to fix itself just because you turned it on? Spoilers, it does.
It's movie magic, right?
It turns into a trap.
Yeah, so they turn it into
giant trap.
Which is fine, but why does it seal itself?
Yeah, right.
When it puts itself together, you can see the welding line. So, spoilers for how they defeat this. Ray and all the original Ghostbusters pull down the lever on the containment unit, and then that spark it makes it a giant trap, which captures this ice god. And
while Ken, not Johnny, is wearing his mom or his grandmother's fire master suit, and
yeah, he's doing a Kamehameha wave. But like, so they turn it into a trap, and a giant like trap like lassos just grab onto this demon and start pulling him down, and then they, for some reason, just rips off the horns. Like, yeah, the trap knows to, you know, that's the source of his power, and just rip those bad boys off. Then it drags him down to the depths of his eternal nightmare, which is what looks effectively like a water heater, a broiler in the basement.
It's a boiler.
And then it seals itself up. Why does it seal itself up?
Because that's what happens.
Well, I saw the movie.
Apparently you don't know much about proton and electron energy, so yeah. I mean, I can only
give
you
some. Well, I know how welding works.
Listen here, dickless. Maybe they had ghost welders that just hung out in the trap. Yeah, that's their job, is to reseal things.
I didn't see an acetylene torch down there or anything.
they're ghost welders. They have ghost welds.
So a 5,000-year-old demon freezes over the entire state of New York, and you're worried about that.
Yeah.
That's what you call bullshit. Like,
it's the arrow. It's the arrow from the original Avengers movie. I've told you guys that theory, right? Where does he get the arrow? So at the end of, if you've never seen the first Avengers movie, they defeat Loki, and they defeat all of the armies. They close the portal. And then all the Avengers show up at Loki, and Hawkeye's right up in front, pointing the arrow. Two scenes before that, he runs out of arrows. He has zero arrows. Where did he get that arrow?
He grabbed one out of the 5,000 bottles.
Why do I have to show it to you? Why don't you ask Joss Whedon to show it to you? Again, you're asking the wrong people.
If I'm speaking with Joss Whedon, it is all about Buffy. Let's get that out of the way.
It's all about Buffy.
Well, then I can't help you. I mean, I'm giving you the answer of who to ask, and then you're telling you don't want to ask him, but I mean...
I want to ask him. It's just, you know, about Buffy.
How dare you? Sarah Jessica Parker is a great woman.
Well, I don't want to. It's an amazing show. I'm like, I want to give him praise. I don't want to. I'm not asking why. I'm asking why not more.
And how do I meet her?
Is she still married to Freddie Prinze Jr.?
Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, they've had like three kids or something like
that. What do you mean, unfortunately? That's a great thing. It's one of the greatest ones that, you know, actually survived Hollywood.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's them, Kurt Russell, and Goldie Hawn. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I'm trying to reboot that, but I can't.
What are we talking about?
Celebrity couples that have survived Hollywood.
Tom Hanks and his wife.
Yeah, but you never even see his wife.
You saw her one scene where people were bothering him, and he actually swore at a couple people, which was very un-Tom Hanks-y.
Yeah, America's sweetheart.
Because it kept coming up to her, and then one of them bumped into her, or like hit her or something. Like, not hit her.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, you just see Tom Hanks go into like rage mode. He's like, hey, back off. Back up.
I will go Sully on your ass. Wait a minute. Captain Stewart?
Are you going to crash a plane on me?
You know what? I'll cast away you, Wilson.
And if I don't do it, Denzel Washington will. So you can't. We're going back to the welding here. So let's just go back to it's just spiritual stuff that happens.
Yeah. So what you didn't see is off camera, Ken Nanjiani threw a fireball down there and welded it shut.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go with that too. That sounds fun.
You know what? I'm going to drop it. I need more Alani. It's too early for this shit.
It's just early enough.
Saying that it's like 11:30 in the morning.
Yeah. But Slimer's back.
Yeah, Slimer's back.
Slimer's back.
Yes, he never got caught.
Well, in the cartoon, he was like the firehouse pet. He was like their version of a Dalmatian.
Again, now he kind of is too. Yeah. He's just kind of hanging around there because they didn't really... Well, he tried to trap him at the one point when he's...
Yeah. Well, and then everything started going haywire.
Yeah. He's like, I got bigger things to worry about than you.
Yeah, you're fine.
The guy that just eats enjoy the hot Doritos and everything, yeah. And Doritos and...
So we're getting up to the... Well, we've already talked about the final fight, but as they're preparing for the final fight, like, all of Manhattan is a giant popsicle. And so there are the brother and the former love interest, mm-hmm. the black girl from the first movie. They're on the roof. They're scouting for the big god. And all they see is this little tricycle just going down, like, Fifth Avenue by itself. The pedals are moving. You can hear it. And they're like, there's a tricycle by itself. I'm like... I would not even be radioing this in. I would be shooting the shit out of that thing.
Well,
there's something creepy about that.
That's some it level garbage right there.
And that's the thing is, like, they were in when they're in the they're downstairs in the by the doorway, and they're like, "Yep, that's not a good sign. Better bring it in."
Yeah, there's something really creepy about a tricycle going by itself.
Or a swing just going like this.
Or wind. It's like seeing a pair of young twin girls in a hallway in a hotel just standing there staring
right before
at
an elevator opens up with blood.
Yeah.
No.
So the scariest
about that.
They always say there's nothing better than a baby's laughter, except when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you live by yourself.
Or what was that Little Nicky where he's where the dog is it? La 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 la. It's like that is so freaking creepy.
In the face in between snoring.
Yeah. So if I'm seeing this tricycle move by itself in the middle of a frozen popsicle of a city, I'm calling it an airstrike.
If I see a popsicle moving by, or popsicle. Hey, tricycle. To be fair,
if I'm seeing a popsicle move too, we've also got issues.
If I see anything moving by itself, I don't care if it's the middle of the freaking day. I'm leaving.
Nope, see you later.
Yeah, big gulps, huh?
What's Thanos' phone number?
It's Thanos.
There's a 50-50 shot that thing gets obliterated, and I'm willing to take it.
555 Thanos. Yeah.
555 Thanos.
So, now that we get that out of the way.
Call in the Hammer of Dawn, Orville Strike Broadway. Oh, get rid of that thing.
But to the point of, like, the tricycle, like you said, seeing anything. Basically, if I'm seeing any apparition of any kind, I'm not feeling good about it to begin with. Like, every ghost in there, if I saw that in real life, I would probably just go away and get the hell away.
So it reminds me of the second movie. Or the first movie where at least all the ghosts and one of them is like a zombie taxi driver.
Oh, yeah.
One guy gets in the bank, he's like, 53rd and Broadway. He's like, nah.
Just takes right off.
Yeah. It's like 100 miles an hour.
Well, they even had a callback by the librarian in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where
that's right.
Because Ray stands back and she's like, shh. And he just walks back and looks at her, and she just, like, nope.
Get her!
Yeah, get her, Ray.
That was your whole plan, huh? Get her.
So the possessor ghost, so when they're in the library, they take over, so they're researching this ice god from 5,000 years ago, who Patton Oswalt is.
I was going to say, enter Patton Oswalt for 8 seconds.
And, you know, he's Patton Oswalt, so he just does his thing. But he was the library's, like, supernatural phenomenon expert. And he's telling him about this, you know, ice orb with the ice god and the fire masters and everything. And they're learning all about, and the possessor orb, demon, ghost, spirit, fucker, takes a scroll and just starts running away with it. And it goes out front. So I learned this from the movie, that the two lines out front of the New York Public Library are called Fortitude and Peacemaker. No. Fortitude. And the other one doesn't come alive. We only know about Fortitude because the girl has to shoot it in the face because the possessor goes, takes the lion and starts going after Dan Aykroyd. And then he yells to the children, like, hit the button on the bike. They hit the button and a little proton pack comes out. And they're like, hey, we're going to fuck you up. So they shoot and miss. And now this 3-ton cement lion is going, walking very slowly, like just enough time, you know, shocking for the proton pack to recharge.
To cut back on.
Yeah. And then it jumps at the girl, and she just, like, lights it up and turns it into a pile of rubble. And then she's arrested, and then Winston Zeddemore comes up, and he's like, Ray, are you okay? You could have got those kids killed. She's like, I'm fine. Like, why did you shoot Fortitude in the face?
Well, it's like, why'd you shoot the lion? You know how hard it is to get kids to go to a library? And you shot the lion.
Also, real quick, because I know there's some of the people that we've been saying this a couple times where we're like, you know, the girlfriend or the friend. I mean, she is a part of the movie as well. So, to do her respect, her name is Celeste O'Connor, but her character name is Lucky.
Okay. Yes, Lucky. She didn't have, like, as big of a, like.
Not nearly as big of a role.
But she was definitely in it. She does try and save the sister's life when she accidentally releases the ice demon out of the devil's testicle. And yes, they do call it that in the movie.
Yes.
There was their podcast comes up, like, we're still workshopping the name. And then he says something very forgettable. And he's like, or the devil's testicle. And I was like, that's the only thing we're remembering.
Yeah. That's what we're calling it.
Yes.
the only thing that, as I think about it more and more, that was kind of slightly off to me is that in Winston's new research center or containment center, whatever you want to call it, where they're basically studying the ghosts and able to actually have them outside visibly so they could study them. You know, the guy Lars that was in, he was in a good portion of the movie too. He was like Winston's kind of main engineer guy there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, you had Lucky there kind of interning to help out.
By the way, the main engineer that kept coming over to help them looked like a spitting image of Egon from the cartoon. Yeah. He had that giant
quaff. And he had the same color. Almost the same color. Well, he had the same color jumpsuit as Egon did in the cartoon.
Yeah.
It was just a little bit darker. It was a little bit darker blue, but Egon had one of the blue ones.
I could have sworn Egon was the one with the light blue.
No, that was Winston.
Okay. Take your word on that. It's been literal decades since I've seen that show.
And you don't remember that? What's wrong with you?
Sorry, I was 7.
Weirdo. Yeah. But the question I had is, like, all right, you got this facility with all these things going on. Obviously, Winston clearly has the financial means. why wouldn't you hire more people to run that place with them?
Right.
Like, why wouldn't
you? The more people involved, the harder it is to keep it secret. Got to keep it a skeleton crew.
But he just, I mean, he only really keeps the area like a secret. I mean, everybody knows they're out there busting ghosts. I mean, because Winston's out there, like, when he goes and gets them from jail. You know, from jail. Well, basically telling everybody.
It looked like there were other people in there. They just didn't get screen a nod. Time. Yeah, screen time. Because like you said, there was a guy in the background who was getting hosed down with goo.
The pink stuff from the second one.
Right. You don't know who that person is. He's just extra.
It definitely wasn't Lucky because she was involved in the conversation.
Right. She was doing something else.
It'd be funny if it was Vigo.
Oh, yeah.
They just kept hosing him over and over again.
Not Vigo, but the guy from the, what was the music director's day? Jan or something?
Janish. I'm dripping with goo.
And you just hear him scream, in the background, and they're just sitting there hosing him down still.
It's Vigo!
You are like the betting of flies to him.
I do like the callback they make to the second movie by saying there's one point, like, the Ghostbusters haven't been seen since that whole Statue of Liberty fiasco in 1991 or something. Mm-hmm. Fiasco? That thing saved your life, son. It's the only thing that cracked open the art museum, or whatever it was.
Yeah, it was the top of the museum. Mm-hmm. But the only reason it was able to crack the museum was because everybody was singing.
Everybody got behind it and got positive.
Singing happy. It was a joyous time. So that's what was weakening the shell enough for them to break. And Rick Moranis
was blasting the crap out of that jail.
He's like, I think I did it.
Yeah, I'm a ghost. Oh, come on. There's always time for Jell-O.
So there are two things I want to talk about.
Talk about them.
So one was the relationship with the girl and, like, the ghost.
We haven't talked about her yet.
Yeah.
That's one thing we didn't bring up, mm-hmm. and she is actually a big part of this.
Yeah. Movie. Yeah. So I want to talk about this first, just because this should take a few minutes.
Take it.
So when the, what is the daughter's character's name? Phoebe. That's right. So when Phoebe gets benched from the Ghostbusters, she, you know, the family gets on a call and they leave. And so she just decides to take her chess pieces to the park and she wants to play chess by herself. It's a common thing to do, from what I understand. I've played chess a bunch of times and lost every time. I'm not very good at the
game. Even when he played himself.
I somehow won and lost.
Before you continue this, I do want to make a point about what you just said, too. When she goes to play chess in the park, all right, now mind you, this is nowadays. It's a... What was she, 15 or 16, I think?
15.
You're going to let your 15-year-old girl go out in the middle of the park at night in the middle of New York City.
To be fair, they didn't have any control because they just went on a call. She's like, well, nothing's stopping me.
Okay, well, then I should rephrase. I'm like, nobody ever thought about that. It's like, it's a park at night in New York. That's like going to downtown Chicago, like a 15-year-old girl walking around downtown Chicago by herself. That's not a good idea.
True.
You don't do that.
But she's a Ghostbuster. She ain't afraid of no ghosts.
But
she should be afraid of that serial killer in the bushes.
I was going to say, the living is what she should be afraid of.
The rapist? You know, this would be like another episode of SVU.
No, it's therapist. Yeah,
I mean, murderers, rapists, child molesters, child abductors, sex traffickers. I mean,
I'm just waiting for Chris Hansen to come out.
It would have been funny if they would have had Stabler and Olivia come up, like, show up. He's like, you sure you should be out here all alone?
Yeah.
Just sitting there. If you need anything, hey, I'm Detective Stabler. This is Detective
Benson.
Boom, boom. Anyway, go to your point, though.
So she goes to start playing chess in the park by herself to relax, you know, unwind. I guess that's what geniuses do. I would have opened up a White Claw and turned on my PlayStation. But that's just me.
That's you.
But so she goes to start playing. She's playing chess by herself, and suddenly the pieces on the other side of the board start moving by themselves. And, you know, they're playing, and she's like, boo. She's like, yeah, you're a ghost. She's like, you're not scared of me? He's like, I'm a Ghostbuster. Well, I'm a ghost. And I kind of picked that up when the pieces started moving by itself.
No, she didn't tell her she's a Ghostbuster.
Yeah, she didn't say anything about
it. She never said that. Because she's just talking to her. She's like, you want to just come back again and I can pretend to be scared? Or I like your flames. Because the girl's covered all in flames. The other thing is, that was a moment where I actually...
I thought she was going to be the Fire Master.
I was preemptively getting ahead of it. And I almost got a little bit of the... choked upness because I was like, oh, is this Egon coming back again to play? Because he played chess with her in the original one. So I'm like, oh, don't do this to me again.
But he passed over at the end of his life. Yeah.
But, you know, it's the movie.
I think that's what she was hoping for, too. Yeah. It's like to get, maybe not him, but to get somebody on.
Yeah, because she's smiling when she's playing chess. And the moment she, the girl shows up, Maddie?
Yeah.
Madeline?
No.
Lind. Lind.
Lind?
Yeah.
Lind.
When Lind shows up, it like materializes, like that smile just drops because, I, to your point, I think it's like, oh, it's not Uncle Egon.
Grandpa.
Grandpa. Grandpa Egon.
Jesus Christ.
I,
do you know the movie?
I saw it with
do
you.
Do you even Ghostbuster? No.
You are afraid of those ghosts.
You
fun fact, when they were doing like the montage of the Ghostbusters from the 80s and they had like the original Hasbro like toy commercial in that, like I was, I leaned over to Gavin and I was like, I'm pretty sure I had all of those things.
Yeah, I did. I know I had the one that had the foam piece or the little
I had the proton pack and I had the little trap.
Yeah,
and it came with like little glow in the dark ghost that you could throw in there.
Yep.
And it glow in the dark too.
Yep. It did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I had all that stuff. I had the firehouse.
Oh.
I had the Ecto-1. I had it all.
Yeah. Like you drove around in a hearse?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Dope.
That's cool.
Yeah. I had the toy Ecto-1. In your face.
So basically, we're introduced to Lind at this point in the story. And then the story continues, and they're learning about Winston Zeddemore's secret aquarium lab, and then they're learning about the ice god, and Phoebe is still benched. So she runs into Lind again, and, you know, they're just generally just hanging out, having conversations about being ghosts, what's it like, and all that fun stuff, I guess, if that's what you're into. Yeah. Goth kids these days.
Yeah.
Back in my day, just wore black. Hated everything.
Back in my day, just wore black.
And then, you know, their hangout session ends. Phoebe goes home, but Lind, you see Lind just walking down a street in New York City, and next thing you know, it is everything is frozen over, all the power goes out, and Ice God starts talking to Lind, and she's like, are you sure it has to be her? But I don't want to. I'm like, okay. And
it's like the dark version of the Charlie Brown teacher where she was, wah, wah, wah. He's like, wah, 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 wah.
Yeah.
And a random,
it's completely inaudible.
Yeah, and a random icicle falls and kills a squirrel.
Yeah.
Just because he could.
Like, just because.
I'm evil, damn it.
Squirrel die.
And then the next time that Phoebe and Lind meet up, Phoebe gets this idea, is like, I can ghost walk. Like, I can feel what it's like to be a ghost. And Lynn's like, yeah, that sounds like the coolest idea ever. I was like, what the fuck is about to happen? Is this, am I about to see, you know, Romeo and Juliet too? Yep. Just Juliet?
Yep.
Yep. She puts herself in the ghost extractor in the aquarium lab, which extracts her ghost essence, and now she's in the ghost realm. So I want to stop right there, and there was a little bit of a moment right there that we all have talked about where
we all see it.
Yeah.
We all see it.
Wait for it.
So Phoebe gets out of the containment unit and she walks over to Lind and says, boo, with like this little flirty smile. And you're like,
I think get very close.
Yeah, they do get very close, and
you feel that tolerance?
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone was all like, are they about to kiss?
Is this
and,
gonna yeah.
And even like we should also we have no problems with
oh no
the LGBTQ community in movies, and but this felt forced as hell. Like there was no build up to what we thought was
well in movies and TV shows nowadays. They are force feeding agendas on everybody and a lot of things. Like it's almost like a and again, I don't care what anybody does, what you do, it doesn't matter to me. But when you're filling a quota, much like businesses do now, like it's not just like, hey, let's hire whoever's the best for the job. We need to make sure we have diversity involved,
which is always good. And for the most part, when they try and like in their push, you know, they're putting that into a lot of movies and TV shows, the writers are actually like, okay, how do we lead up to this so this doesn't look like we just put two females in a room and said make out? But so that's why
do it. I swore just before the chant started, that's what I heard in the background, make out. G-balled up.
So usually there's some storyline that builds up to that. This, like, even, I was like, that's, no, this feels, that don't do it. And then Lind says, I'm sorry. And you're like, why are you sorry? And then, like, her eyes glow blue and the devil's testicle is taking over Phoebe. Because he can't take over humans, but he can take over ghosts.
And technically, her spirit was still connected to her human body because he needed her to chant that saying to open up.
He needed a human voice to enact the words.
And so that's what I, one of the other holes in there that I wanted to, I was kind of wondering about was the, when the possessor went and grabbed the film, the wax filament that they were playing, it got destroyed. And it didn't like seem like, I don't know if it was he wanted it to get destroyed, like he was trying to take it away.
Yeah, I think he was trying to stop them because that's the more what I didn't notice. Played.
Yeah, because you don't really see much out of him outside until he possesses what
the tricycle.
The no, the not the tricycle, but the
fortitude. The lion.
No, because he's on the tricycle and then he touches the door and he gets to shoot, you know, all through the building.
Oh yeah,
but then it's in the proton pack, and I think how do they get him? I can't remember that part. Like, how do they get him out of the proton pack?
Oh, if you remember, it's I think if I remember correctly, I think he just left. Oh no, he jumped into the pizza and Slimer ate the pizza.
Oh, that's right. Okay, because, okay.
Because what's his name was able to do something. Whatever he did, he was able to move the proton stream. The gun from shooting.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So he
oh, yeah, the fire master. The fire.
Yeah,
like that's that. When he finally gets.
And then it jumped out of that because he was going to fire at the proton pack, and then it jumped into the pizza. Slimer ate the pizza.
Up until that, he was working on a candle and moving it from here to here.
So that's a plot point later in the
for
film.
It.
It's a plot point.
Yep. Yep.
So he's practicing with an old Zippo, and he just puts it lit on the table, and he's like, make the fire jump from here to the candle, and we're talking like less than 6 inches. So he's spending like a good chunk of this third act just trying to move, and he does it like once or twice. And then when he's like, he finally learns how to be a fire master, he goes down to the ice team, he's like, give up, or I'm warning you. And he's like, nah. And he's
okay,
like, yeah, I warned you, Zippo. And then he goes to flick the Zippo, and nothing's happening. And even the kid's like, did you use all the lighter fluid?
You told me to practice! You told me to practice. Well, all right, so one of the funnier ones is Bill Murray's introduction into the film.
Mm. That was the second thing I want to talk about. I want to talk about Bill Murray's performance.
He's sitting there talking, and he's got the Egon's, you know, thing.
The colander.
Yeah, the colander on his head with all the wires and everything. It's like, yeah, one of us is wearing something weird on his head. Mm. I'm just trying to see if you're possessed. And you, like, ask him a question, and then all of a sudden he just throws a pin at his face.
Yeah.
He's like, what the hell did you do that for? And he finally sees the flames.
Yeah, so every time he gets angry, like, the fire in the background.
Yeah. that was so cool. He was like, what? Like, he's like, seems like you're angry. Yeah, you just hit me in the face with a pen. That's a normal reaction. I'm not possessed.
Well, you're forgetting, too, one of the funniest parts about that portion when he is warning him with the Zippo and it's out of fluid. Mm. And they're like standing there. They're all standing there ready to fight him. He's like, does anybody else have a lighter? And he's like, and Dan Aykroyd's like, I quit smoking in the early 90s. And Bill Murray's like, proud of you then.
I'm proud of you now. Yeah. I know we're running out of time, and I wanted to talk about Bill Murray real quick, about his performance in this movie. Mm. I think you brought this up. Do we believe like most of his lines were ad-libbed and the director just said, you know, screw it, it's Dan Aykroyd or Bill Murray, I'm going to let him keep it in?
I mean, he's ad-libbed a lot in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
And they've all worked with him so much that I think probably.
Okay.
I don't think a lot of it was written. I mean, I do think there might have been an overall script for him, but
he also had
very little screen time too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they might have. I mean, they might have just said, hey, you know, since Bill Murray's only going to be in this much of it, let him just say whatever he wants.
Yeah.
You know, get the feels.
But I mean, there's even like this interview with Paul Rudd and Bill Murray, and they're, you know, trying to do a promo for it. And Bill Murray's like, hey, have you getting these clocks in the background? Like, just keeps throwing, like, the camera off. He just takes he's like, I didn't even be there for the interview. He's like, so you guys getting good shots back here? And, like, Paul Rudd's trying to, I'm promoting a movie here. And Bill Murray's just like, I don't care. It's not my money. I already got my money.
So, since we only have a few minutes left before we end, ratings. What do you guys rate it?
Well, before we do ratings real quick, do we think, before we get a number score, do we think it was better than Afterlife or about the same? I don't want to say it was worse than Afterlife.
No, I want to say it was about the same because it was, I can't say it's better. I'd say it was different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They each had their own unique things. Like we said earlier, they had the epicness in Afterlife because you hadn't seen all that stuff in so long. But yeah, no, I think they're on the same tier.
Okay. Also, quick shout out to when they referenced the first movie. It's like Paul Rudd's like, yeah, we turned into dogs and had fun, and the wife's like, yeah, got a little action. All the kids are like, oh, gross, but they high five.
Yeah,
I thought that was hilarious.
Well, and she's trying to get him to be like the asshole.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can be an asshole. I'll be a biggest asshole to your kids, but not to you. Yeah. I'm like, it's like, oh, thanks. That's because that's what I'm attracted
yeah.
to.
Yeah. Yeah. She's trying to get him to be more of a father figure.
Assertive. Yeah. Yeah. It's like,
that was a like, real, like, did they get married or are they just in a long, very, very just, long-term relationship?
At yeah. This that's, point? Well, she finally, Phoebe does finally call him dad at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they think they actually got married.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they even asked him, well, the mayor asked him, he's like, and you're not even her father or something like that, like, or what's your relationship? Like, I'm her teacher.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'm her step teacher.
Yeah, I'm a step teacher. Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So, numbers.
I'd say 8.
I'm giving it a 7. I don't know if it hit 8. It was close. Don't get me wrong. It was that ending that bothered me. Like, it was so quick cut.
No,
it was the final fight.
I agree with that.
Let's start playing that chant thing. Release the demon. I personally give it a 9 because again, I didn't have a lot of issue with the ending. It was a little faster than the other movies. Yes, however, again, because I was so nostalgic with the cartoon, it reminded me a lot of that. Mm. I have no problem with that. But yeah, I mean, I love all the equipment. I love that they actually showcased the equipment a lot more too in this one.
And I like how they're building it for the third one.
Yeah.
Because they don't recapture all the ghosts that were released from the tank. So now their job's just got super busy.
Mm-hmm. And they're really passing over, like, the mom's letting the kid
drive.
Take a drive, you know, take the car, and then they're all out there. Phoebe, I'm guessing if I had to take a guess, the next movie would probably jump to when Phoebe's 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was going to be my thing. If we get another movie in a year and a half, she's like, I'm 18 now. I was like, bullshit, that's not how math works.
Actually, I'll give you real quick what I think is going to happen. And it's only because there was so much talk about the original script of the first Ghostbusters movie. When Dan Aykroyd first brought it to Harold Ramis, or not Harold Ramis, Ivan Reitman, and Harold Ramis as well. He brought it to him. The original script was a huge story. And for the time of money and technology and the first time they did the movie, Ivan Reitman told me, it's like, we got to scale this down. Because originally it was going to be teams of Ghostbusters all over the world. And there was also going to be like an interdimensional factor to it, to where they get stuck in another dimension. That's when they fought Gozer. That's what opened up the door to send them back to their dimension. But then they were going to be like just all over it. And that was going to be the beginning of the movie, just starting off with all these teams of Ghostbusters and stuff. And they were just going to have like little wands.
Oh.
Instead of a full pack thing, that like almost similar to like the hand thing, but it would be just something they hold. But I'm thinking now it's going to fast forward. This is my prediction. They're going to fast forward. Phoebe's going to be at least 18.
Okay.
They're going to have Winston is going to have developed more teams of Ghostbusters, whether they be all over New York, all over the country, all over the world, whatever it may be. But there's going to be multiple teams of them, and it's going to be one huge thing where they're all gonna
meet up in like Central Park,
just a combined effort globally to stop this one big entity. That's my prediction.
Okay. I don't have a prediction from a third outside of they have to recapture all the ghosts that were in the containment field. I want to see that. So there was a PlayStation 3 video Ghostbusters video game which Dan Aykroyd and before he passed Harold Ramis worked on for the script. And that they've said in interviews, we consider this canonically the third Ghostbusters movie because they couldn't get it made, but they helped write the script for this video. I want to see more references to that video game.
Okay.
A lot of stuff happens in that. That's generally one of my favorite PlayStation 3 video games. So I want to
Which one was that again?
What it was just called Ghostbusters, I believe.
Was that the one where they teach you all the things like
like a rookie on the team.
Yeah, and it had like boson darts.
So you get like you get like the normal plasma one, and then you get like a short range, like almost shotgun type of one to stun enemies. And you get a couple of other ones.
But there was one thing that was in the Proton stream because I had the game for the Wii.
Oh, okay,
if it's the same game.
Yep, it is.
And you'd be shooting the thing, and all of a sudden you hear Dan Aykroyd be like, use the boson darts! And it would be the same gun, but it would be this beam this ball of energy that would go through the proton stream and hit him. It would be like a big cannon blast.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So that would be weakening him, and then that would just do like an extreme weakening.
Yeah, but you also have to throw out traps and everything. Yeah. And you're fighting Gozer again, because in the first part of the video game, you have to defeat the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Yeah. And you're like, I thought he already chose it. According to Ghost Law, once you choose an emissary, you can only have that one emissary.
Yeah.
So the first big bad of the video game is the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man again. But yeah, like I said, that is they can since they wrote the game, they consider that canonically the third Ghostbusters film. I want to see a couple of references to that if they could.
And they may.
Yeah. Problem is, I would have to find a PlayStation 3, play it, and then try and remember.
Rob's still got one.
Okay.
Yeah. He's got every. He kept every system he ever bought.
It's probably on Steam now too. You can get it on your computer.
Probably. Yeah. And to anyone who knows Steam, yeah. To anyone who knows this sentence, my PlayStation might. My EO1 PlayStation 3 did a yellow light of death during lockdown. So, RIP. Nice. Press F for respect.
All right, guys. But we actually are right about out of time this time. But thank you guys so much for joining us talking Ghostbusters Frozen Empire again. Overall, great movie.
Yes.
You know, so
yes.
If you haven't seen it, don't listen to this episode and go watch it.
Call off the work. Yeah. Go get a babysitter. Yeah. Go see this movie. And then... You know, like, subscribe, listen, and leave a comment.
Yes. Check us out on all our platforms. Check us out here on YouTube. But since it is Easter, I'm sure everybody's got family stuff to do for us today, at least. Mm-hmm. So, again, guys, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. We'll talk to you next time for Movie Talks and Chill. We're your hosts. I'm Tony Serrato.
I'm Gavin Butts.
I'm Patrick Wall.
All right, guys. Take care. Don't forget, guys, you can visit us at our website, movietalksandchill.com. Email us at talktous@movietalksandchill.com or find us on our YouTube channel.
You can also follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Movie Talks and Chill.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, coming soon to Apple Podcasts, CastBox, and Overcast.
New episodes available every Wednesday. Talk to you then.
Theme music for our podcast was composed, arranged, and performed by Paul the Rock.